Code Winds, Episode 15. In this episode, Michael Jackson and Ryan Florence join me to discuss what's special about React.js, why it changes the way we think about building web and mobile apps. Welcome to the Code Winds podcast, where I cover leading-edge web developer news and training with an emphasis on JavaScript, React.js, and Node. My name is Jeff Barjeski, and I am here to help you navigate the winds of change. Today, Michael Jackson and Ryan Florence join me for a fun discussion about React.js and why it fundamentally changes the way we think about and build web and mobile apps. We discuss React, React Native, isomorphic JavaScript, React Router, and so much more. Once you've completed this episode, I think you'll understand why we are so excited about React and innovations coming out of the React community. The links and show notes for this podcast are available at codewinds.com/15, as in episode 15. On to the show. Today, I'm excited to be joined by two great developers, Michael Jackson and Ryan Florence. Michael Jackson has led engineering teams at several San Francisco companies, including Path and Twitter. And he's the primary author of several open source JavaScript libraries, including Mustache and React Router. And Ryan has been creating websites since the early 90s, focusing primarily on front end for the past several years. He's worked as an engineer and developer at Instructure, and he conceived React Router and co-maintains it with Michael. So welcome, Michael and Ryan.
Hi, thank you for having us on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
I had the pleasure of collaborating with Michael when I was working at Elsevier, and we were using Strata, the Node web framework that Michael created. And he instantly responded to my questions and pull requests, and so it was really a great experience to work with you on that. And Ryan, I just loved your talks at JSConf. When you actually talked about Angular, Ember, Backbone, and React, I couldn't believe that you got that all
done. And Polymer,
you know, all in 30 minutes. you contrasted and compared and gave some great examples, and I thought it was amazing.
Thanks.
I was glad that we could get you on today to continue the discussion on React.
So, awesome, man. Yeah, it was cool to finally put a name or put a face with the name at ReactConf.
Yeah, absolutely. So anyway, so let's get right into it and talk about React. So why should people get excited about React? What's special about it?
So for me, at least, you know, when you've been around for a while, you've used a lot of different libraries, and it seems like there's a new JavaScript framework every other day. And you know, it's you know, when you first hear about something new, and I was the same way about a year ago when I first heard about React. I was like, yeah, right. You know, it's just another thing. And it's so rare that something actually comes along that really changes how we think about building stuff. It's not just using the same old imperative methods for building applications that we have had for years with frameworks like, you know, MooTools and jQuery and YUI and a bunch of others, Dodo. It actually, you know, made popular this idea of building things with a virtual DOM and abstracting away a lot of the hassle of worrying about, you know, managing your DOM state manually. So, you know, I would say that React, as far as, you know, for me personally, it changed the way that I code as much as, you know, jQuery did back in 2008. You know, it really is on that level of, oh my gosh, this is really going to change the way that I work and how much I enjoy my job on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, for me, you know, Michael just mentioned the kind of two generations ago frameworks, and then we've got one generation ago, and we've got the current ones like Ember and Angular and Knockout, stuff like that, which did a great job of getting us away from all of the imperative stuff, and we get like these nice dynamic static templates to declare our UI, and then they've got these frameworks underneath that keep them up to date. And that was a big shift too, but it was just building upon everything that we knew before, like observing objects when they change and then updating the UI. We just didn't have to update the UI ourselves anymore, but still under the hood, we were observing and mutating objects. And what excites me about React is it doesn't care about your data model. You just use plain JavaScript objects. People always ask me, React is just the view. What do you use for models and controllers? And I just sort of grin at them and I say, oh, well, for my models, I use array, object, number, things like that. And but the new paradigm with React is we aren't observing, we aren't having a bunch of events. We're just throwing data at functions, and then they return descriptions of UI.
Yeah.
And it's hard to explain until you start doing it how big of a shift this makes in your user interface development to not worry about your app over time. You're not mutating the state of objects over time in your UI components anyway. You're just throwing data at them. And man, that simplifies so much.
Yeah. Yeah, I've had the same experience when I've been using React. It's easy to reason about, you know, it's simple functions, you know, everything is right there. And so it's, you know, I just love working with it. So it's been different.
The other thing that gets me really excited is, although those static templates from other libraries, solve a lot of great problems, they also introduce new problems where now you have to have these new template languages that implement new things. So like Ember recently got block parameters in their each loops. When you're in React, when you map over data, you already have block parameters because you're just in JavaScript or in Angular.
It's just a function, right? It's just a function.
And then like in Angular, you've got these directives, which are a great abstraction for an Angular app, but they're by nature global. And JavaScript has already solved, same with web components, actually. I don't need to talk about Angular web components. Your web components are globals. But your UI components in React don't have to be global because they're just JavaScript functions. So we get to use the solutions that JavaScript already provides, like modules and scope, things like that. And we don't have to wait for the framework's template language to implement a solution for that.
Yeah, it really does make things easier, especially when you have a lot of conditional logic like that and different things that you need to deal with. Yeah, trying to do it in a template is just difficult, and you can just drop down JavaScript and do it in React, and it's so simple.
Mm-hmm. I also love, now this isn't so specific to React, because quite a few of the other frameworks, in particular Ember and Angular, are doing the same thing, but React and the community behind it really is embracing evolving the language and pushing it forward. And like I said, I think this is something that everybody's doing. The Babel project in particular comes to mind as being something that is incredibly useful, you know, and Babel and React work very, very closely together. Babel nowadays, in fact, has they just launched with some specific optimizations for React. You know, things like, you know, using ES6, just using common JS, like, or ES6 modules, mm-hmm. You know, decisions like that kind of help me to just get sort of past sort of this baseline of what module system I'm going to use, how am I going to write my JavaScript, and they get me sort of past that and into the land of, okay, I'm actually now writing my app. Which it might sound trivial, but it kind of, for a long time there, for the past couple of years, there's been a lot of pain around that. You know, mm-hmm. There've been competing module systems. You know, there've been competing, you know, specs and standards, and you know, for how you're going to write your JavaScript. There's CoffeeScript and TypeScript, and so it just kind of feels really nice to have, you know, a tool chain that is adopted by the whole community, and that makes it really, really easy and quick to get started with things.
Yeah, it'd be great if we had something as quick as Ember CLI too, because that, like, that's probably the fastest out there for front-end development, to just start building your app immediately. And yeah.
And so that would basically generate you a framework, something to start with. Is that kind of what CLI does, or?
Yeah, Ember CLI does that. But like what Michael's saying is, React has kind of picked some, maybe not picked, but the community has picked some general conventions. Like pretty much everyone uses Webpack, and everyone uses CommonJS modules, or using Babel, they'll use ES6 modules that mm-hmm. compile down to CommonJS. Yeah. And so that makes library authors like us, it makes our jobs a lot easier, because we can just ship to NPM and use CommonJS modules, and yeah. we know that React users can consume our stuff, and we don't have to, like, you know, do a whole bunch of dancing around to distribute those kinds of components.
Right, right. So I guess one question that a lot of people might have is, well, is this just, you know, another framework? I mean, is it like Angular Ember? Is just another flavor of something? I mean, I know we've talked about some of the differences of, you know, being more functional and all that, but how would you guys answer that?
So we actually had a little conversation on Twitter the other day about this. Pete Hunt, you know, so Ember is working on their new rendering engine called Glimmer. They're doing a lot of cool stuff. And then Pete was kind of like, wow, you know, React could be a really good rendering layer for Ember. And when you think about it that way, it really helps you to see just yeah. how small, and not small, but how, you know, how sort of nicely separated
yeah.
The responsibilities are, you know, that the problems that React tries to solve really are just about your view layer,
uh-huh.
Whereas, you know, Ember or you know, takes a much more holistic approach, or Angular take a much more holistic approach to managing sort of the whole app. Something that's really been a breath of fresh air for me is, for example, taking React, and I know Ryan has done a lot of this as well, you know, taking React and integrating it with an existing, you know, DOM library,
yeah.
or, you know, like jQuery or even like a Backbone library. It makes it really, really easy. The abstraction that React gives you makes it easy to say, you know, for example, in, you know, component did update. Okay, now I know, you know, that inside this method, I can go and grab the DOM node, and I can do whatever I want with it. Similarly, the high level React.render method just takes a DOM node as its second argument. You know, where do you want me to render this component? So if I had some React code living inside a larger Ember or Backbone app, I could just you know, somehow get a reference to the DOM node where I want my little piece of React to live, and then just say React.render my component to that node.
Yeah.
And the larger framework surrounding it doesn't have to know anything about
yeah.
that node
yeah.
or what React is doing in that part of the DOM.
Yeah,
so that's great. It's really nice how the responsibilities are very, very well defined, you know, React just owning the view layer for you.
Yeah, generally speaking, if you pick Angular or Ember, you're probably dealing with a greenfield application. Although, like, I know the front side, it's a consultancy down in Austin run by Brandon Hayes. They do a lot of integrating Ember into real apps or existing apps. But generally, Ember wants to own the whole thing. Whereas with React, like Michael's saying, you can sneak it into a mature app. You know, most of us can't go and rewrite our whole app. If we have an app that's paying the bills, we're not about to rewrite it. But we still want to use new technology. Maybe we're running into performance issues, or maybe people just want to use new tech. Maybe you just got such old stuff, no one's having fun, and recruiting's getting harder. Recruiting gets a whole lot easier if you're using something that people are excited about. And I, from experience, I found React to iterate into a mature app incredibly well without disrupting everything else around it.
That's fantastic. So I guess the next question...
Sorry. So the original question was, is this just another Angular Ember? Or like, what's different about this? Angular 2.0 and Ember 2.0 look and sound an awful lot like React. So it's not just new and exciting to a lot of other people. It's actually exciting to Angular and exciting to Ember. Both of those teams love React.
Yeah.
And they love the direction that it has helped them go with their new versions. Angular is getting rid of controllers and scope, and they're focusing on components. Ember is getting rid of their controllers and their views, and they're just focusing on components.
Wow.
They're talking about one-way data flow. In another year or two, React, Angular, and Ember are going to all feel very, very similar.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So next logical question is, who could use it? Who can use this React? Or who would be a perfect person that could use it on, is there certain types of projects, or pretty much any project could probably take advantage of React?
So some of the people who've been asking us to help them with their React apps are, companies who have, highly, as Ryan described them, mature apps. These are apps that have been around for a long, long time. And they need a way to try and revive them. They need to try a way to try and work on them and prevent the code base from growing stale and rotting. And React works really, really well in those types of situations. It's also a great solution for a greenfield app. In fact, one of the reasons that we wrote React Router, which we'll probably get to in a minute, but was because we wanted to write greenfield apps with React, and we were used to being in Ryan and I actually both come from a background where we use a lot of Ember, Ember manages the URL for you and sort of updates the whatever is going to be on the page according to what's in the URL, right? That's super awesome. URLs are an incredibly important piece of the web. And we were missing that with React because, it just takes care of your views for you. So we wanted something that would help us to declare ahead of time which views were going to be rendered and what the component hierarchy looked like given a certain URL. Getting back to your question, with something like the router, and some history and state management, React is also a really, really great solution for greenfield apps. So I don't really see any situation where I would say, today if you're developing a UI in JavaScript that it's not a good fit. I think it's highly flexible. It could fit almost anywhere you need it to.
I've used React in some kind of weird places. When I was doing React Week, I've got a little repository during the lectures, and I wanted it to create. Right, I needed a bunch of index.html files for each of the topics that I was going to do, and so in my npm start, I actually used React in my little build script to create index.html files, rendered them to HTML, and then I saved the file into my directory. I know someone else who has used React and our router to build a static site generator. So they built their app with our router, and then I don't know how they crawled their routes, but they crawled the routes and then kicked out a bunch of HTML and then just uploaded those static files up to AWS or something.
Excellent.
But I think, so we've talked a lot about brownfield development or iterating React into existing apps. And then we've talked a little bit about greenfield development with React. React also brings something brand new to the table for greenfield development is server-side rendering. So now you can render your entire UI on the server before it goes to the browser, send all the HTML down. The user sees it immediately before your JavaScript even downloads. Your CSS is there, everything's there. Once the JavaScript application lands in the browser, it looks at the HTML that it wants to render into, looks at a little checksum, and figures out that it is actually the same application that rendered this previously on the server. And so then it leaves the HTML alone and then just adds the DOM events on top. And now it's a client-side app. It's a single-page application, as some people call it. And now as you click around, you don't go back to the server except for data. So like it's eliminated the trade-offs of should I render in the client or should I render on the server? You just do both, and you get the benefits of both.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really exciting. That's one of the neatest things that that I you know came across when I was learning React was the ability to you know, create these isomorphic apps and I really liked your demo, Ryan, when you showed that with React Router where you had an app and you showed you know okay here's what it looks like you know normally when you're using it and I can turn off JavaScript and everything still works. So I mean you know so you've got all the SEO from a rendered app if you need to be crawled by search engines, so you've got that the HTML is there. And so that can also give you a great startup performance when you go to the page. And then, but it also works as a client, you know, a single page app as well. So you get all the benefits of that too. So really, really pretty awesome.
Speaking specifically to the point about rendering on the server side, I think that is incredibly significant as well because it closes the gap between, you know, server rendered pages and client rendered pages. I think everybody probably remembers the famous blog article from Twitter back in 2012. I was actually at Twitter in 2012 when
I was so angry.
Yeah, when Dan Webb, who he's an awesome developer and I really have a ton of respect for him and we did you know really enjoyed working with him at Twitter, and you know they made the decision that. We needed to render, you know, stuff on the server because our client-rendered app was just too slow. And they were right. You know, our client-rendered app was way too slow. We were using Mustache.js at the time. We even rolled our own version of Mustache to, you know, try and make it faster. But despite that, that doesn't change the fact that somebody who's, you know, downloading your app over, you know, 3G in you know some distant part of the world is you know waiting forever for stuff to render on the page, and so you know rendering server side is a really really valid use case, and so what React brings to the table is you know they just say well you know honestly we don't really care where you render. You could render on the server if you're on a slow network. You could render on the client if you're in you know really fast browsers. And now it's, you know, they give us that possibility, and so now it's just up to us to leverage that and build tools that make it really, really trivial to decide where something is going to be rendered.
It even goes farther than that. You can render to native iOS views, you can render to the canvas, you can render to Netflix's JSON web embedded, whatever that is that they showed. The abstraction is really, really good. It's here's a declarative UI, just throw data at it, and then we have methods to kick out different versions of the it's like you're targeting the DOM, you're targeting a string, you're targeting UI, native UI. It's so the question who can use it looks like almost everybody pretty soon here.
Yeah, that's great. And so you can really just use this however you need to. If you've got a project ready, you can start using it. If you're doing something fresh from scratch, you can do it that way. And even if you're leveraging other frameworks now and you need to just pick pieces where you want to do this or maybe you want to start using it for the render layer and improve performance. So there's lots of ways to bring it in. So I guess next question I had is for all your the classes you've had and the students and that is it hard to learn? Is React hard? I know with Angular you've got this up and down where you can start to get productive but then it gets hard and then it's an up and down curve of learning. And so how's React compare?
At Instructure, by my last I was there almost 4 years. By my last year and a half, I was mostly in a consulting role. I wasn't doing a whole lot of feature development in any of the applications, and I just went around training the teams on our front end stack and helping build reusable components across the stack, and teaching them React was probably it was just it was clearly easier for everyone to get. If you can program, you can write React, and not so many walls. Like some of the frameworks, you hit walls because you need to do it an exact way, which is arguably a good thing that they force you down certain routes in React in a lot of cases. In other cases, React is a little bit more open. And what I really liked about it is it allowed me and the people on my teams to code ourselves out of problems and then ship. And then maybe that wasn't the best code, but that code that like we all kind of recognized was ugly or didn't like a whole lot, it's got the right walls around it. You're inside of a component. And so it protects that ugly, it protects the rest of the code from that kind of junk that you did in there. So React, there's not a whole lot to learn. If you know JavaScript, you almost know all of React already. But it just gives you a really great boundary, and then is open enough to let you code yourself out of problems and actually ship things.
Yeah, well, I wanted to hit on that last point that you made, Ryan, about there, you know, being less to learn. I think that's really, really significant. I think whenever you see a library with a really, really large API, that's a pretty good sign that it could be a lot simpler. That it might be. That it might be kind of difficult to use. And so, you know, React, I think a lot of the power in it comes from creating the right abstraction. And lots of times you'll think that you need something, and this for me has been the hardest part of learning React, is you're used to doing something a certain way, and you'll think that you need something that React doesn't give you, but then you kind of start working through it in your head, and you realize, well, no, like, I don't actually need that, and I can just do it like this. and it's, you know, it's in that way it kind of helps you. The React authors are fond of saying that it helps you to fall into the pit of success.
Right.
And it really does. I think, yeah, you know, some of the stuff that Ryan has said illustrates that as well. It makes it easy for you to do things well, easier for you to do things well because of its tiny API and the constraints that it gives you.
Yeah. So I probably did 24 trainings with my team at Instructure. Maybe not that many. In the teens somewhere, though. And then front-end masters, and then React Week recently. So I've got quite a bit of experience teaching React to people. And it's almost never React that they're struggling with. It's usually just JavaScript.
Mm. Wow. That's fantastic.
Sort of.
Well, that's good. So anyway, I guess I'm also curious. What brought you guys to using React in the first place? You know, how did it get going in your various companies?
Oh, you want to see the tweet stream? I gotta pull up my old tweet. You know how Ryan and I got to using React was kind of, what's the word, serendipity?
Yeah, maybe I should go first because I had been using it and then you tweeted that thing, right?
I'll go find the tweet.
Yeah. That'd be good to have the tweet for the listeners to go look at.
We'll put this in the show notes.
So in Structure, we bet on Ember. We were a Rails shop. I really liked convention over configuration. And, mm-hmm, I mean, Yehuda Katz, he's an amazing developer. Yep. All had a lot of trust in him. And so we went with Ember. We had it for, I mean, we were messing with it for almost a year and kind of weren't shipping anything. I don't know why. That could be a failure of our team. It could be my failure because I was kind of the one trying to help everyone do it. Mm-hmm. But for whatever reason, it wasn't really working out. We had a heck of a time unit testing it too, because Ember likes to own an app, right? And so unit testing is kind of difficult because how do you get a component on the page if you don't have a handlebars template? Mm-hmm. So we just had some struggles, mostly around testing and also just ramping people up and learning it. And around the height of my frustration because I literally spent my entire day just debugging people's Ember tests and trying to figure out where the heck errors were happening. I was able to speak at JSConf, and I was just going to talk about Ember, Backbone, and Angular, and then the organizer sent me an email like 3 weeks before the talk saying, hey, we were wondering if you could throw React and Polymer in there as well. So I'm like, well, I got 30 minutes, so that means 5 minutes each. and so renamed the talk to Angular, Actrum, or Bone, and then I messed with it. And so like I had looked at React right when it first came out, and in like 10 minutes redid their demos in Ember, and I was like, brushed my hands off and said, I don't need React. But this is almost a year later, and so I finally got on with it for my talk. And after an hour, I was just like, had my face in my hands thinking, oh, shoot. I want to use this everywhere. But I knew that wasn't plausible, especially with how amazing Ember's router is. And so for the next 2 hours, so my first hour, I was sold. Next 2 hours, I just kind of did a quick little proof of concept about how I could make a router that works a lot like Ember's in React. And after 2 hours, I actually had something working. And that probably impressed me the most about React is that I could build an abstraction like that in 2 hours of barely learning the framework.
Wow.
People will try to attribute that to like my ability. Ask Michael. I'm not all that great of a developer.
Oh gosh, no. I'm just saying. I said that the wrong way. That came out. We had no idea what we were doing with React when we started building the router.
But we still made it.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. We made it, and it worked. Like I tried to get into like figuring out, you know, other library like their core code and trying to be a contributor and stuff, and I was never able to just pick up something as quickly as I was able to pick up React and like build a router like it worked. And it was really an eye opener for me of like two guys who had no idea what they were doing were actually able to make something that worked and was useful for other people. So that to me was a huge testament to the just how just how well React was built.
Yeah.
And so I'm almost done. Sorry, Michael.
That's good.
And so then I just threw all of my toughest problems that I'd ever run into as a front-end developer at React. I built an accessible autocomplete next. I did it in like 2 days. Autocompletes typically would take me 2 or 3 weeks in other abstractions. Man, what else did I throw out? If you watch my React.js conf talk, you'll see a lot of other interesting use cases that I threw at it. But I just threw my toughest problems at it, including testing. How do we test these? And that was just sort of laughably easy. So I just threw all of that at it. And then at Instructure, we had this hack week. And I encouraged a couple of my coworkers to use React for their projects and then tell me what they thought. And every single one of them came back to me after their project, after a week of React, and they were like, when are we putting this into our stack? And then that cut to Michael is when I saw his tweet.
Oh, yeah, cut to me. Okay, so I pasted a copy to the, a link to the tweet in the chat. So I was doing my thing in Ember one day. And I actually read an article that morning by James Long that was entitled Removing User Interface Complexity or Why React is Awesome. And I'm a little slow, so it actually took me like 2 or 3 times reading through that that piece before it finally clicked what React was doing and why it was awesome. And so anyway, I'd go back to my Ember app and I felt like I was having this context switch between my controller and then my template, and I would have, you know, 2 files open or 3 if I was, you know, putting CSS and applying styling to my template as well. And so what I was having to do was I was having to switch back and forth between all these files. And so I tweeted and I said, you know, that's just one of the most awkward parts about Ember for me is the context switch. And then Ryan immediately replies, and he goes, Yeah, JSX. I really like JSX for that reason. And it's funny because JSX for a lot of people is kind of leaves a bad taste in their mouth. But
right.
You know, for me it was the thing that turned me on to React. It was like there's absolutely no reason why my template needs to live in a separate file as my controller.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my templates eventually just turn into this dead code. And you know, my controllers, that's where I really want to live and be coding the whole time. And so, you know, he started tweeting about it and I said, yeah, you know, exactly. That's exactly what I mean. That JSX is so nice.
It's the same concern.
It was like, yeah, oh, it's absolutely. It's the data and the data being displayed on the page and how, you know, the controller is the representation of your data. Well, so is a view, right? The view represents your data. It's just in DOM instead of in objects or whatever you've got.
Yeah.
So, you know, so it wasn't, what, 1 or 2 days later when, you know, I was still sort of thinking about this. I was tinkering around with React, and Ryan kind of pings me on chat, I think it was, and he said, hey, check this thing out. It was the V1. We haven't even gotten to V1 yet. It was V0.0.1 of the router, and yeah. We've been hacking on that thing ever since.
Oh, that's awesome.
We were sort of just acquaintances at that time still.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. The thing that I knew about Ryan was he liked Require.js, and I was like, I've always had a hard time understanding Require.js. Mm. Oh, AMD. AMD was the thing.
Yeah.
Remember when I met you that one day at
it
was like Mountain West JS. Mountain West
RubyConf. They didn't have the JS one back
then.
That's
right. The RubyConf is like 3 years ago. And I was like, man, I don't get AMD. And I was talking to some guys from Instructure, and they're like, we have a guy who knows all about AMD. You need to go talk to this guy. And it was Ryan, and I was like, oh, it's this guy, I don't know, whatever.
Yeah, for me, it was always about the modules, not necessarily about how they look.
AMD guy. Yeah. Nah, dude, globals.
Yeah, awesome. Well, fantastic. That's a great story. I'm glad you guys shared that.
Then all of a sudden the router was popular and we were like, oh crap.
Yeah. Yeah. It took off.
We better make this thing work. Yeah. So Michael rewrote all my code.
Then we stopped sleeping and then our kids stopped hanging out with us and our wives and it got ugly after that.
Yeah. I know it is such a great thing to add though to the React family. I mean, it just really brings, you know, all the concerns about routing, you know, just takes care of those for you and gives you a nice way to be able to fetch data and all that for your routes and so yeah, I really like it. It works really well. So
we're still working on that data fetching use case. We still want to make that really, really nice.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, that'll probably get us into talking about Relay.
Yeah.
And GraphQL, which is sort of the next thing that a lot of people are anticipating coming out from Facebook. They gave a great talk about it at ReactConf, and it is definitely sort of the next concern that everybody's like, okay, so I've got my view layer and I've got, you know, the router, so I can sort of, you know, manage which components are showing when. Now, how do I get data into them? And Facebook is doing some really awesome work around this problem. We've actually been really super impressed with how open their team has been with us. They've actually, you know, invited us down to Facebook headquarters, and we've been down there and we've talked with them about the problem and how they're solving it and how we could adapt the router to be more friendly to things like GraphQL and Relay and solving this problem specifically of data fetching. This is just an aside, but you know, a lot of people, they'll say, you know, that the community is important, and then they don't really show that the community is important. They don't really take time to listen to the community.
Right.
But this is something that I really feel that the React authors have really seriously nailed on the head, because they'll say that they care about the community, and then they'll show it by listening and by participating and by, you know, working with us to help us to, you know, understand how we can be building things better. And for us, it's just been a total pleasure working with them. So anyway, getting back to the data fetching thing, we've been considering lately a lot of modifications to the high level router API. It's all on GitHub. You can go and check it out if you want. But a lot of it is built around, you know, resolving these concerns that not only the Relay team has, but also the React Native team, and just, you know, working to make an API that satisfies all these different use cases, which we think we've got a pretty good handle on now that we've been working on it for a while, and we've got some exciting ideas in the pipe and on the way, but, you know, just takes a little time to get stuff done.
Now that we actually know React, we can probably build something even better.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, it's pretty exciting stuff.
Oh, React has kind of shifted.
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say React has kind of shifted a bit too with their very just future forward opinion, attitude toward JavaScript. Now that we have ES6 classes and stuff like that, that will definitely influence the final API that we have in the router.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's been really neat to see all this come into play pretty quickly, and I've just been loving like you mentioned before, using Babel and being able to write the newest ES6 code with React and get that all transpiled down to something that can work everywhere. So it just works really nice, and that's been great. But yeah, Relay, that was a fantastic presentation at React Conference, and then I guess there's been some blog articles about it recently that we'll link to. But yeah, it's pretty exciting. I mean, and I guess, you know, in a nutshell, it's kind of, you're kind of defining more of the what the component needs as far as data nearer to the component or in the component, such that it can. But the end, Relay is going to then go ahead and make that efficient. It's going to go and find out all the things that are needed and make like one fetch to get all of it or something like that. So
the idea is you've got this GraphQL query, which is a static property of your component class. And you can, you know, get that query. And if you know, for example, you know, a bunch of components that are going to be displayed on a page, well, then you could sort of fetch, you know, get all of their queries at once and roll them up into one fetch from your server. The really nice thing, that dovetails really, really nicely with the router, because when the URL changes, we know what your hierarchy of components looks like on the page. So we actually go and we match the deepest route in your hierarchy that matches. We'll say that's the one that matches, and then all of its parent components match as well. And so if these components also had queries on them, which like these GraphQL queries where they said, you know, this is the data we're interested in, well, then we could go and dispatch that query using whatever method Relay has to communicate with the server. In addition, we've also got the ability to say in the router, for example, if just a subtree of your currently active route hierarchy changes. So say you've got view C nested inside B nested inside A. Mm-hmm. You know, if C changes to D, but A and B are still the same, the parents haven't changed, well, we know that as well in the router. And so we could, in theory, only fetch the diff, only fetch the stuff that D needs, because we've already got the pieces that its parent needs. Again, a lot of this is just sort of theory at this point, but it seems like the approach that GraphQL has taken dovetails fairly nicely with a lot of the work that we've already done with the router, and we'll keep working with the team to make sure that it happens.
Yeah, the most exciting thing for me watching the Relay talk, I was just sitting there thinking, we're kind of already doing this in the router, except we don't have GraphQL.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah, and I think it makes so much sense to be able to have, you know, your data fetching, you know, your data needs live pretty close to where you're, you know, creating your component, so that, you know, when you change something, you can just go to like one place and change, you know, both things, versus having to jump around and find something in a different file somewhere else and where, whatever. So, components, I guess, are kind of one of the big things we've been kind of talking about here. And so that's kind of the basic building block of React, if I understand it right. And, you know, how would you describe them to the listeners? Are they difficult to make? You know, is this something like an Angular directive or a web component, or is it something different altogether?
Yeah. So if you're coming from Angular, I'm not trolling. I'm just trying to get it right. It is the same as a isolate scoped element restricted transcluded directive.
okay.
Which means that like it can yield a template inside of it, like it can have children inside of it. Its scope is isolated, meaning like in Angular, you get a whole new scope that doesn't inherit from the parent scope. So the data you pass in is the only data it knows about. An element restricted, meaning it's an element. It's not like an attribute that's going to add behavior. It's all just elements. So yeah, coming from Angular, that's what it is. Coming from Ember, it's actually very much like an Ember component, except for there's no two-way binding. So data you pass in, if you change it inside, it's not going to go and change upstream. Mm-hmm. The data only flows one direction.
Yeah.
Same idea with Polymer and web components. But I like to think of it as just UI. Like a web component is just a chunk of your UI. Mm-hmm. Throughout my career as a front-end developer, it's been a decision to like, what kind of UI is this? Is this in my controller? Is this in my view? Is this in my template? Where do I define this property? How does this thing get initialized? You know, there's a whole lot of places your code could live that is all involved in describing a chunk of UI. But with React, it's just all this one abstraction, and they've got the right lifecycle hooks for all of it. They're simple, yeah. They're easy to build, and they just represent a chunk of UI, and that's that.
Yeah, and the interesting thing too is how easy it is to create them. I mean, they, you know, you could start out with just the render method, and you know, pretty much just write what you want to show up, and then, you know, later on, if you need some of these additional features, you can hook in some other things, but you don't need to start there.
Absolutely. I love that. I've got a snippet actually in my editor that'll just give me, you know, the class name, and it already has the render method in there. And I love how easy that is.
Yeah, that's awesome. So this is exciting stuff. So I know one of the reasons I wanted to talk with you today was that you guys are offering some React training. So I'd like to learn a little bit more about that and tell our audience.
Okay, so thank you. So Ryan and I have this crazy idea to go and leave our jobs and start a company and go and talk about React because we love it so much. We are going to be in Seattle next week. Redfin is hosting us there in Seattle at their office downtown. And then we are going to be, so that will be on the 9th and 10th. And then we're going to be in San Francisco the following week on the 16th and 17th. Redfin is also hosting that one at their office downtown on Montgomery Street. You can register for either of these events on our website, which is reactjs-training.com, or just, you know, hit up Ryan or I on Twitter, and we'll be happy to give you more details about that. So those aren't the only two that we're doing. Those are just sort of immediate. In May, we'll be in Boulder, Colorado, and Boston, Massachusetts. We're actually working with MIT. They're going to sponsor us out there. And then in June, we're planning a workshop in New York. And then we'll also be at React Europe in Paris later this summer, June 29th and 30th, doing a two-day workshop before React Europe conference kicks off.
And Michael doesn't know about this, but we'll also be doing a workshop at React Rally, which is going to be here in Salt Lake City, where I'm located.
I love finding out about stuff on podcasts for being recorded. This is awesome.
Oh, also, we're gonna make salary too this month.
Perfect. All right, we're gonna actually make some money. That's great.
Fantastic.
Tell my wife; she'll be happy.
All right. So that's exciting. So that's great. Great. What kind of, for your classes? These are 2-day classes, and what would students learn when they come?
We've got on the website that we want to make you a React expert, whether you're a beginner or intermediate. React itself is not huge, but if you come to one of these trainings for 2 days, if you know a little bit, you don't know anything, I think you'll walk out of there an expert and be able to take that back to your job, take it back to your team, and either start using it today in your existing apps or be able to start a new app with it. In 2 days, we can absolutely make you an expert.
That's great. Would it cover lots of these things we've been talking about? I mean, server side, client side, do you get into talking about testing and Flux and some of those other things that React Router.
Mm-hmm. So some of the primary focus, I guess you can't have too many primary focuses, or foci. But focus a lot on components and React itself, the life cycle, props and state, and when to use either one of those, how to build reusable components. And then we'll also get into stuff like Flux. Not so much to say you need to use Flux with React, but rather to explain what it is and what problems it solves, because the problems it solves are problems that you're going to have to solve as well. And maybe bringing Flux into your app is not quite ready, or your app's not quite ready to do something like that, but it helps you know what problems you're going to have to solve with the rest of the code around where you're putting React in. Talk a little bit about isomorphism. Everyone's still kind of learning how to do that. FYI, our reactjs-training.com website is isomorphic, so you can view source on that and see that we actually send down the HTML from the server first.
Awesome.
On the website, we got a whole list of all the topics that we'll cover.
All right.
But again, our goal is to just make you an expert.
Yeah. That's great. So what do people need to know when they want to come, if they want to be productive in this class? What should they have some prerequisites that they need to accomplish first? Or
so I think we hit on this a little bit earlier, but it's just JavaScript. You know, it's just make sure that you're comfortable writing JavaScript. It would also really really help you if you have some sort of familiarity with some sort of build system, either Webpack or Browserify. It's not necessary, but it's definitely helpful when you're actually building your app and getting it ready to go in production. And then just kind of an open mind, and you really just want to have fun with it. I mean, that's, for me, one of the biggest things, and one of the reasons I wanted to do this company with Ryan is just because it really is fun. Mm-hmm. It really makes developing stuff fun. I mean, I write a component and I write another component and I hook them up, and I don't stress about it at all. I don't like worry that I'm, right, not doing something right or putting it in the wrong place because it's so easy to refactor. So just come like ready to have some fun and ready to maybe change some of the ideas that you have about how you currently do things.
Great.
Maybe write a few arrow functions in ES6 first.
Okay.
Arrow functions. Nobody even uses this inside the arrow function. That's what the arrow function is for. Nobody uses it to auto. They just use it because they don't like to write the word function.
Yeah, it's shorter.
My rant is over. I'm done.
No. When you're in React and you're mapping over some data, yeah, and then you want to call like this dot set state or add an event handler, you use this all the time in arrow functions
in JSX. You do, yes.
Yeah.
In JSX, you do.
Oh yeah, but you're right. I hate writing the word function, and so I'll use arrow functions all the time.
I know you hate writing the word function.
When he says people write, he actually means Ryan writes.
Right. Never writes the word function.
Yeah. And so what kind of format would you, are you guys using for this teaching? Is it a lecture and exercise, a hands-on? I guess they should have their laptops, obviously.
Yeah. So we're going to be doing a lot of hands-on. So especially the first day, Michael and I were actually just going over some of the plans. But the first day, especially, you'll have, we'll do a little lecture for 30 minutes or so, and then there's an exercise to get hands-on experience with it and try to get it like really, really solid in your mind. And then we review the exercise, then we move on to the next topic. And then there'll also be some longer exercises of like building a bigger app at the end. And it's not going to be just, you know, we're typing up on the screen and then you type what we type. Rather, it's we give you some requirements and some failing tests inside of the browser for you to go and get those tests passing and build something.
Great. That sounds really good.
And lots of jokes and screwing around too.
Awesome. Perfect. That makes things go quicker. Go more enjoyable.
For sure.
We might argue about promises.
Right. I'm over it. I'm over it.
Yeah. All right. So we've talked a little about React Router. Was there anything else that we needed to mention more about that? I guess in a nutshell, I mean, it's really powerful. It allows you to really make it easy to reason about your routes and to have the data associated with what you're going to use for them. And how would you explain React Router, you know, beyond what we've already discussed?
Well, I would just encourage people to go head over to the GitHub repo and check it out and get involved.
Yeah, read the overview under the guides folder.
Yep, yeah, I pasted the link in the chat here, so hopefully that can show up later. But it's you know, if you just head over there and just kind of go through some of our examples and read through the overview, Ryan's done a terrific job of writing up a bunch of documentation and guides and examples that show really how it's useful and show you the features of the router. Just head over there and there are a bunch of contributors and people who've really been active and helping us out with the project. I mean, there's no way we could do this project without a vibrant community of contributors. So
yeah,
especially not without Dan Abramov and what's his name? Taros?
Yeah. Alexander.
Yeah, those guys are awesome.
Yeah, it's
you know, I actually
go ahead.
I had someone come up to me who mobile developer interested in React because of React Native, and I had a lot of generally server-side people actually getting interested in React as well. And a few of them have asked me, "What's a router?" maybe there are some people listening right now that are still scratching their heads a little bit. I can sum it up very quickly. If you use React Router and you click refresh on a React Router app, it will most likely show you the very same thing that you were just looking at. Yeah. If you hit the back button, it's going to work. If you hit the forward button, it's going to work. If you command click on a link or right click a link and open in a new window, it's going to work.
So
that's what routers do. Make sure that the URL and the screen that you're looking at stay in sync.
Yeah, that the web is not broken in this fancy new future of client rendered apps.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's really slick how well that works, both client and server use. So the
awesome, thank you.
Yeah, the we talked about JSX. That's basically this ability to you don't have to use JSX to use React, but it's a nice option for you, and it allows you to kind of mix in something that looks a lot like HTML with your code, and then use all your normal power of JavaScript to manipulate it and loop over things and whatever. And at first people get turned off by that, but it turns out to be a really nice way to work with the view layer, right?
Yeah, Ryan is actually fond of saying it's just functions, right? It's just JavaScript. And something that we actually explore in our training course is, you know, a bit of the kind of theory, I guess you would need to understand to really get what the JSX is doing. But once you break it down like that and you just see that the JSX is a more convenient way to write, you know, a bunch of nested function calls, I don't think you mind it so much. But yeah, if you're absolutely opposed to it, of course you can just stick to your JavaScript. No problem there.
Yeah. Do you find that it's that designers getting involved with React, is it easy? Is it hard? How does that work?
That's a really common question. So I worked with several designers and talked to them about their experience in React as we were moving over to at Instructure, and they all loved it. And maybe we have a bias in our hiring of designers, that we hired people that would be excited about getting their hands in JavaScript a little bit more, mm-hmm. instead of just messing with some handlebars or HTML templates. But they were all really excited. Most of them wanted to get more into JavaScript anyway. So they were actually excited to do it in the first place. But after talking to them a little bit about it, they said it's not any... I asked them specifically, like, is it hard to find the HTML that you need to add a class name to, or that you need to reorganize or move around? And this is all anecdotal, of course, but it's my experience, so it's the only thing I can talk about. And they all said it's not any harder than finding a partial in a Rails app.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just posted a link in the chat to a tweet from Dan Abramov, who says, you know, he said, at Stampsy, JSX enabled our designer to author, refactor, and tweak components at crazy speed. and that's really is the kind of, that kind of sums it up for my experience as well, working with people who you know, are not engineers, but they want to be able to affect change in the app. It's, you know, JSX looks a lot like HTML, and so it's not really that scary if you've done HTML or CSS in the past. You're very familiar with those technologies already.
Yeah, and when I was talking with Pete Hunt about this, he mentioned that, you know, that a lot of designers that he's worked with, they like to think, when they're creating these UIs, they like to think in like components. They like to think in like, you know, little layers and little pieces that they stack together, and and so it ends up a lot of times the real components map really well to what the designer was originally thinking, and so you can kind of get this nice synergy between what they were doing originally in Photoshop or whatever, and then, you know, coming all the way down to the React code. So.
Oh yeah, like in Sketch or in Illustrator or Photoshop, they've already got these components.
Right.
It's really nice to pop into the code and be like, oh, they almost named this the same thing that I did.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
Pete Hunt wrote a really cool article about it, and it's called Thinking in React, where he kind of breaks down a piece of UI and shows step by step how to take an existing piece of UI and how it would map to React components.
Yeah,
that's a really cool one to go check out if you're interested.
Awesome. The other thing is all of the boundaries that a React component draws are the exact boundaries that we want in our CSS.
Totally.
And so from that perspective also, I think it helps designers because it forces us, the ones writing the code, to create the right boundaries for their CSS in the first place.
And I guess another question that I've heard, you know, recently is what is this React Native thing? It's been all the news here in the last week or two. So can you talk a little bit about what that is?
I was talking about how React changed the way I thought about building things. So it's pretty rare that like the same team blows your mind twice in like 12 months, you know, they really did. Like with the React Native project, what they're doing is they're taking the same principles that guide the design and structure of React user interfaces, and coupling that with the power of, you know, native performance. So these aren't web apps that run on your mobile phone. These are native apps that are built using JavaScript, using the principles of React. And what they do is they you know, they've done a lot of smart things, like, for example, all of the, you know, rendering is happening on the main thread, and extra work is going on the outside threads. So, for example, everything that you're doing in React Native, it's asynchronous. So when you're calling into the React Native APIs, what they're actually doing is they're going onto a separate thread. And they're doing that for performance, for good experience. You want to have the best possible experience for people when they're using your app, which means, you know, keep anything that's not absolutely essential to rendering that UI off the main thread. You know, and so they're doing things like that that really help you to get, like, a really, really good native experience, but couple that with the powerful you know, UI building techniques and architecture that is React. Yeah, I've seen tweets from people who have done, and I've talked to people who've been doing, you know, Cocoa and Objective-C for years and UIKit. And if they really, you know, have taken some time to investigate React Native, inevitably the feedback is, this is a game changer. This is totally going to change the way that I build native apps. And these are people who, you know, historically have kind of scoffed at JavaScript, right? Yeah. Who have said, like, you know, it's not fast enough. You know, it's just, it's not native. These are people who hate, you know, web apps, right? Because they're just not up to the standard that the native developers have set for themselves and that you can achieve when you use native technologies. And these people are fascinated by this approach that React Native is taking. So, you know, when I see people like that talking and saying, you know, there was a tweet from, I don't know him, and I'll paste the link in the chat afterwards so you can give it to your listeners. But, you know, he's been a on the core team developing UIKit for the last several years. And he takes a look at React Native and he says, this is a game changer. Right? When people like that take notice, it's incredibly significant, and it's incredibly exciting too.
Yeah.
And just the explosion that I've seen in people adopting it and building stuff on it is really, really exciting. It seems like every 20 or 25 tweets in my timeline these days is somebody who's doing something with React Native. It's incredibly exciting.
Yeah,
I think the thing that I'm most excited about is as a user of some service, I use their web app, I use their native apps. And as a developer on a team where we have multiple apps for the same thing on different platforms, you really want the user experience to be coherent between all of them. And we've all been chasing this dream of write once, ship anywhere to get that, but like that never really works out. And so the React Native approach is learn once, write everywhere. And what this will allow teams to do is, instead of we've got our iOS team and we've got our Android team and we've got our web team all building kind of the same product, instead you can have one team that owns one of your products and builds it on all of those platforms, because it's not the technology. You don't have iOS users and web users. It's the same person.
Mm-hmm.
And so if your developers are developing your app on all these platforms and it's the same team, man, I think you're going to have a much better cohesive experience for your users, and also more speed for your developers, because it's not really the platform that slows you down as much as the domain knowledge around a product. And if you've got a team that knows what they're building, and now they can use the same technology on all the platforms, I think that's just going to unleash a lot of teams, their creativity and productivity.
Yeah, that's exciting. And I, another thing cool about the React Native is just how fast you can develop, you know, by basically refreshing without having a compile step. And that's just, that's beautiful. Yeah. It's just,
yeah. That's a huge thing for developer productivity, right? The web has that down, you know, especially when you're using a tool that'll automatically rebuild things like Webpack. You know, you make a change in your code, you command R, or if you've got hot loading in reloading enabled, you don't even do that. You instantly see the changes.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, for a Cocoa developer or an iOS developer who's used to the, you know, waiting 30 minutes or 30 seconds to, you know, a minute or even more for his build, that really makes a huge difference in the, you know, writing some code and getting the feedback on how it behaves cycle. which vastly increases your productivity. By the way, with regards to the comment I made earlier about the UIKit developer, I found him, and I posted the link to that tweet in the chat. He was a developer on the UIKit team from iOS 4.1 to all the way through version 8. And he says, I say with confidence as a former UIKit author, React model for the UI layer is vastly better than UIKit's. React Native. He says React Native is a huge deal.
Wow. That's great stuff. Awesome.
Yeah, I mean, you see stuff like that, yeah. You're like, oh, gosh, you better sit up and take
notes. Yeah, it's definitely something to take a look at, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I guess, coming from Ruby and that, I've in Node, I've been a part of some good communities. But I'm just so impressed by the React community. I mean, this React conference, where we got to talk to more people, it was just fantastic. I was such a great community. Everybody's, helping and sharing and it's all trying to move our industry forward and, find new ways to do things. And
totally. I totally agree. The people that I found, in the React community have been genuine. That's the word for me. Their smiles are genuine. Their desire to help you understand is genuine. Their desire to learn is genuine. And it's really been inspiring for me as well.
And there's a culture of like, who cares what everyone else says is the right way to do things or a best practice? Like, what actually helps me ship things and what actually helps me build things and what actually is fun? And it's resulting in incredibly good abstractions.
Fantastic. Well, man, I just loved talking with you today about React and all the family of products, projects out there. But I guess we need to close it up. So I want to make sure that everybody checks out reactjs-training.com, and we'll have links for the show notes. And definitely, the classes are Seattle, San Francisco in April, Boulder in May, and Boston.
And Boston, yep.
And then I don't know where the rally one was at or which month.
And then that'll be in Salt Lake in August.
In August,
yeah, late August.
June, got New York City and Paris, France, end of June. So so lots of, check it out, reactjs-training.com. It's got the, you can sign up there. You got all the information about what they're going to teach. And of course, you can even suggest additional cities and all that, I guess.
On that note, I mean, we actually do private trainings for people's teams as well, which we customize a lot more, meet with the team and figure out what they want to get out of the training. So it's not just these public ones. You can contact us for private training as well.
Fantastic. Beyond that, any other ways that they should reach out to you or follow you?
So on Twitter, I've pasted both of our links in the both of our Twitter profile links in the chat. I'm M. Jackson. Ryan is Ryan Florence. On GitHub as well, we post a lot of, we do a lot more things besides just the router. We're doing a lot of different projects on GitHub. One of the projects recently that I've been doing a lot of work on is called Mock. It's HTTP server and client library for JavaScript. Awesome. And proxies. Like, you basically build whatever sort of HTTP app you want with it. So that's one that actually a lot of people have been like starring ever since I've been working on the router, because they're like, oh, let's see what other stuff he has. So
that's excellent.
That's great. And they go, oh, Ryan hasn't written docs for this yet.
Exactly. I've been trying to like bribe him to write some docs for it. But he's a hard man to sell.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Michael and Ryan, it's just been fantastic. And I've really enjoyed talking with you, and it's been great to share, and hope that training is a big success, and I hope that we can spread the word about React to more people and grow the community.
Thank you, Jeff. It's my pleasure to have been on this call with you guys.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Thanks, Jeff.
See ya.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this discussion about React.js with Michael Jackson and Ryan Florence. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Michael and Ryan are two genuine, good-hearted developers want to share what they've learned with you. So check out reactjs-training.com for a list of cities for their two-day training offerings, or hit them up for private training at your office with your team. That's reactjs-training.com. We have a special discount link for CodeWinds listeners to save $300 off their April 16th to 17th React training in San Francisco. Go to codewinds.com/reactsf, R-E-A-C-T-S-F. That will redirect you to their site with the discount code applied. So jump on that to reserve your spot. The links and show notes for this episode are available at codewinds.com/15. If you would like to keep up on the latest in web developer news and training, follow me on codewinds.com, where you'll find this podcast, tutorials, and video training covering JavaScript, React, and Node. Stay tuned for more React content on CodeWinds. I'm preparing a video training course on React that you'll be able to take at your own pace or as part of a class. Head over to codewinds.com and click the yellow button to sign up for my Leading Edge member list. I'll be providing information about becoming charter members for the course in the coming weeks. If you have troubling questions, topics, or app projects you would like to have covered on CodeWinds, visit codewinds.com/topics. Provide your suggestions or add a plus one to existing ideas. I'll use this to prioritize my future content for you. That's codewinds.com/topics, T-O-P-I-C-S. Until next time, this is Jeff Barczewski with CodeWinds. Music by Audionautix.com.